Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkanen, along with Chris DeScarlice. We've just decided to let Dennis and Spencer go because I listened to the show a few times when I was gone and they were making fun of me. So it's just me solo here today along with Chris. We got a lot to cover here. We got a takeover. First Data is taken over by FISV. UAL soars on their earnings. We got a lot of bank earnings to go over here today. Bank America, Goldman Sachs, PMC, Comerica, and BlackRock, if you want to throw that in that category as well. After the close, we got earnings from a CSX, KMI, and also Alcoa. On deck tomorrow, earnings from Morgan Stanley at 8:35 a.m.
You can't get rid of me that easy.
Oh, man.
You tried. He tried. I was trying to call. He doesn't even answer the phone. But you know what? I snuck in the back door on this call. So you can't get rid of me that easy. I know you'd like to. Maybe you got rid of Spencer, but you can't get rid of me that easy.
Well, first of all, Dennis, I did catch the show a few times when I was on the road. And I just want to know.
I hope you didn't listen to yesterday's show because we made fun of you a lot yesterday. Nick had his computer on mute. I'm like, oh, well, Jill does that 25 times a show.
You said that to Jeff Hirsch, too. Or was it Jeff? Okay.
We always pick on poor Joel. When he's on the show, we pick on him. When he's away from the show, we pick on him. We need to stop picking on Joel.
No, Dennis, you got to let me ask you this question.
What?
Have you had a winning trade yet this year?
I don't know.
Why was I
complaining more about my losers?
That's all I hear. Oh, I'm stuck with this. But
so
you
bad.
I'm
the glass half empty type of guy. Actually, believe it or not, let me go look. I'll see if I've had a winning trade. No, actually, let me check my sheets and see. I think I've had, I'm bringing it up. I'm not talking about winning trades here, but I'm bringing it up and see if I've had a down day this year yet. So for all my complaining, I'm not sure if I've had a down day yet. Where is it? Oh, there it is. Okay, so bring it up. No, I'm messing this up too. I can't do anything right this morning. Here I am trying. Hang on. Now I just lost my locates. Oh, you really threw me under the bus.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Stop's giving me problems. Skype's been giving me problems. And I'm going into my sheets right now. And yes, I did have a down day. I had a down day on January the 4th. That was when I got caught with a whole bunch of biotech, or it was January 4th or 5th, the second day of January trading day. That was when I caught with a whole bunch of biotech short, and Celgene got taken over. Celgene helped me in my investment portfolio, but it did not help me in my trading account. So I had one down day. So what have we had? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 days this year. So I'm 1 for 9, one down day. But it was a really bad down day, though. So I wanted to complain about it because I was mad. Believe it or not, I'm angry that Celgene got taken over and I own it in my investment account. But just because it crushed me in my with all my biotech shorts that I had overnight. So anyways, you know, that stuff happens. But
all right, well, let's get to the news here. And before we get to we got a lot of earnings to cover. We got a takeover here. I guess call it the tech sector here. FISV is to combine with First Data Corporation in all-stock transaction for equity value of $22 billion. FDC shareholders will receive 0.303 FISR shares for each share they own here. So a nice, 23.
That's a nice premium.
Yeah, it's a nice premium here in the tech sector. We got a believer here. 6 million shares have traded. Look, FISV. We'll go over the technicals. Dennis, did you see this one coming? Any comments on this one? And any sympathy, please?
No, I don't think anybody saw it coming. I mean, it's. But the one thing to consider is valuations. You know, after the November and December slide in stocks, a lot of these stocks are still significantly down. So you're starting to see some M&A action. I'm sure that's why Bristol Myers scooped up Celgene. I'm sure that's why FSIV looks at FDC and says, yeah, you know, this was 23, 24 bucks back in October. If we were going to do this deal back in October, we're going to have to pay over 30. Well, now they can get it on the cheap there because the stock has declined. So I think you'll still see more M&A action coming here as you've got, you know, companies that are, if they were eyeing companies back in September, October, they're definitely eyeing them now because they're cheap. You know, a lot of company stocks are still, you know, very cheap, especially from a valuation perspective there. I believe FDC, and I don't have the data in front of me, but I think it was trading with a low multiple as well. It's a stock I trade every once in a while, but it's not a stock that I trade a lot. So, but FDC was trading at 9 times. So 9 times. Anyways, FSIV says cheap enough for us, and they scooped it up.
It's hard to get a historical perspective on FDC because I know they've done, I don't know if it's been stock splits or reorgs because the data going back on this, I know the stock has been around for a really, really long time. Yeah, I'm going on my 20-year chart here, but only gives me information back to like 15, 16. But I know they've been around for a long time. But what we're more interested in here is what FISV is doing. Traditionally, the acquirers, depending on the premium that they're paying, get hit. And that's initially what happened here. Your pre-market low snuck this under $70 here. And I'll give you your exact pre-market low. Just made 69 even, but now you're getting a nice bounce here. Boy, this thing's been all over the place. Since you hit 69 even, you had a rebound to 77.40. Not going to give you a bunch of numbers on this. I'm just going to keep an eye on that closing price from yesterday. And that closing price from yesterday was 73.80. No, excuse me. What was the close on the daily? 75.04. So I'll keep an eye on that. If it, I'll call that, you know, temporary resistance right now. If you can take that out, they really like the deal for the company. Greener skies ahead. I mean, this did have a big sell-off. I don't have the exact 50% retracement. You could be running into some problems there, but I'm going to use that closing price as a swing level here.
And it is a big deal for them, too. $29 billion the market cap on FSIV, and FDC market cap at the close was $16 billion, so obviously significant premium here being paid, $3 to $4 billion. So if you think like that the way they've been doing it, you know, they've been knocking off. Actually, it's a bigger premium. That was almost a $5 billion premium they're paying. And if they've been doing that, knocking that off the market cap of the acquirer, that would knock it down a little bit further. So I don't know, 73.50 is cheap enough yet. It's only down 2%. It's holding up fairly well, but I don't think I'm a fan of buying it here. I think it's got more work to do on the downside, FSIV, just from an ARB perspective.
And in that sympathy plays here with FTC, is anything, I can't really, I'm, you know how I am with tech companies. Has anything come to mind for a potential sympathy play?
We'll throw this one to the chat. I don't follow the sector close enough here. So it's computers, you know, obviously it's accounting firm buying it. I don't know. Okay. So I have nothing off the top of my head. I don't trade FDC hardly at all, so I'm not going to know any sympathy with that. So if anybody else in 73.50, now it's 73, so I'm up 50 cents already in the paper trade that I just called. I should start to short that thing.
Do it. Boom, hit the button. Hit the button. Let's go to some earnings after the close. And before we go to the UAL earnings here, I'm just, this is tongue-in-cheek, but I am upgrading American Airlines to like a screaming buy. And the reason is I did a total of 6 flights. I had some connecting flights on American over the last week and a half.
Talk about your trip. How was your little vacation there, Joel?
I wouldn't call it a vacation. I went to Lynchburg, Virginia with Emily for 3 days.
You were everywhere.
She had a interview with the News in Advance, a newspaper there for photography position. I looked at 8 apartments in 2 days. I had to be nice to absolutely all everybody, you know, the landlords and everything. So that was very difficult for me. And then I was in New York, and I got to tell you, I had one of my best trips ever to New York. You know why?
Why?
Because I stayed within a 2-block radius of the hotel. I went in to see a film that a cousin of mine produced regarding the Holocaust and some lost paintings. I flew in straight to the hotel, straight to dinner, straight to the Lincoln Center, back to the hotel, out for breakfast, back in the car. I stayed within a 2-block radius of New York City. It's one of the best trips I've ever had there. But
nice.
No one really cares about that. But I just thought American, they were really nice to me, and I just thought the service was great. And
you should have bought all these airlines here while you were on vacation, Joel, because UAL blew it away last night.
Yeah, they did. They did. And what we got here from UAL is a beat 241 versus 198. Sales beat two. Estimates came in at 10.35. They came in at 10.49. And just to add to the good news, they raised guidance. Guidance was at 1093 for the fiscal year. They bumped it up into the $10 to the $12 range, and UAL is soaring here. And you know what? That stock had – well, no, I'm looking. I thought that held up better than the others. But the only thing I could see here from a technical perspective is you had to spike high off the number at 86.50, and you just got someone lurking there. Do you see any size at 86.50 there, Dennis, or is it just
– Well, NASDAQ, eh? So yeah. It's a little bit trickier to bring it up and – I've got to restart that program as well, my book program, because I had Skype crash. Skype just like totally took over my computer, and I don't know, that was what was we were doing at 7:55 trying to get me onto the show, and my Skype wasn't working. I had to restart the whole computer, so I have a couple programs that are running there. One of them is my NYSE open book, and I have not restarted that program yet, so I can't look ways, but UAL is a NASDAQ listing, so okay. It's not going to show anything.
86.5 is your pre-market high. I like that level because on December 20th, you had an 86.89 high, so there you have a high in the pre-market, not quietly confirmed, but let's just call it $87. If you're looking for more on this run, you're looking for UAL to be up $10 today, it better get through 87 on the hop here. AAL is trading in the green. That's
Oh, they're up. All. You want to talk sympathy now. You got sympathy here on the airlines. They're all flying.
Okay. American Airlines. Boy, to me, one level and one level only sticks up here. That's 33.50. That's an area of a triple top from earlier in the month. Love. Is Love getting any love this morning?
Oh, yeah.
Up a buck
six. Love's up 80 cents.
Yep. That's at 50.67. Let me see if I could find. I see a pair of highs at 51. That may get tested. And another pair of highs at the 51.50 area. And what the heck? What are the other airlines? Safe?
Delta, DAL, Safe, ALK, and JetBlue. Every single one of them trading higher here this morning off of UAL numbers. So big-time sympathy plays here in the airlines. They're offline.
I mean, the airports were busy. Things were moving well. No delays. I mean, people
that – didn't lose your luggage?
Carry-on the whole time. I did
move.
I did the carry-on route.
I try to do that whenever I can. Now that I go places, and if I go somewhere with kids, good luck with the carry-on route. We not only have baggage, we have oversized baggage now, and I get the oversized baggage fees, which are like $50 a bag.
You try
I'll be and, overweight.
You try and put your kids in your carry-on luggage?
No, that's what I'm saying. I can. I wish I could, but no, we got to get the bags. We get the 50 and the 50-pound limit or 45-pound limit if you fly Spirit because it gets you for an extra 5 pounds. Mine will always weigh in at 47 or 48, just enough that you can't rip out a few clothes and throw them in the garbage there that you got to pay the overage fee. So,
like that.
Yeah, since I've started traveling, we went a couple places with the kids. I tell you, man, there is a lot of stuff you got to bring when you got a baby.
And Jazz is asking about the government shutdown and the TSA delays. I went out to the airport early yesterday based on hearing that on the radio, and I just zip right through. So I don't know. There's a lot of TSA workers still going to work. But I just want to say, let's move on from the airlines talk because we have Frank Holmes coming up at 8:35, and he's the CEO and Chief Investment Officer at U.S. Global Advisors, and he is the creator of the JETS ETF.
Oh, perfect so, day to have him. How do you pull that off?
Because I know when I'm out of town that you guys have a lot of problems with the show, and I have to.
So you just know, like UAL. Oh, we got to get the JETS ETF creator on the show.
Yep,
that's a solid guest right there for a solid day. Perfect timing, Joel. You're good.
All right, so let's move on to more earnings here. And I think your big mover on big volume here is Bank America. And Bank America, they deliver exactly what the street wants, and that's a Q4 beat of 7 cents, 70 cents versus 63 cents. Sales of 22.7 billion versus estimates of 22.45 billion. They see nothing in their business to suggest a slowdown is imminent. And I think that was one familiar theme that we had when the market was just getting cranked, was that all of a sudden, the street, everyone decided we're going into a recession, right? Remember that? And that we were raising interest rates into a slowing economy, and we were all doomed. And stagflation or whatever the term is when you have that, but not the case here. Bank of America up $1.23 here, Dennis. I know you're not going to be chasing this here, but you know, you want to short it here. Maybe find a psychological number. What's the pre?
I mean, you get up near 28, but it has not paid to short these banks. So for Citigroup, goes up every day. I mean, we've been boom, boom, two huge days. I don't know if you listened to the show a couple days ago, but when Citigroup was trading down on the earnings, it was like, I feel like it could go green. It not only went green, it continued to just run. So I guess that was the tell. And I said yesterday, I didn't think JP Morgan could go green. I was wrong, because it turned around and went green too. They just want to buy the banks no matter what. And you got Goldman reporting here this morning. It's giving back a little bit of the gains, but still trading significantly higher. The banks are hot. You know, it's kind of ran now. You're a little late to the party, but I tell you, you can't argue, they're hot.
I could give you I wonder whether I did the 50% retracement the last time I did my my levels on Bank America, and I do not have that data sheet with me, but we got to be pretty darn close. You had a high in March, 33.05. This is about 33 to 23, 10 point move. That takes you back up to the $28 area. Good. You know, psychological, up $1.20, huge move. Just think of how much volume it takes for Bank of America to move $1.20 in their regular session in order to get a gap fill, 26.81. And I think, Dennis, I think I sent you a text that there was a lot of highs bunching up at 26. And if we could clear 26.
That was a good call.
Yeah, that was
it. Making some money. Did you play it?
Yeah, I did. Go. I did. I did play it a little bit from the long side. So I'm happy about there, about the Bank America. I'll go a little bit farther out, though. All right, but that's not only bank delivering earnings today. And Dennis, I will let you say the name of this company that everyone likes to hear you say.
Goldman Sachs reported, and we're up $4 here. So good news for Goldman.
Yeah, we were up more here, and I'm seeing a Q4 beat, 561 estimate, comes in at 604. Sales are beat too. 7.78 billion was the estimate. We came in at 8.08.
Leaking here a bit, though.
Yeah. Now, we get something at 758.44 and a Bloomberg estimate here at 453, 483 versus 453. So everyone does their numbers a little bit different, but Goldman had really been tarred and feathered. What was it? Was it the Malaysian seat? What? I can't remember. That was like 3-4 weeks ago. They had problems with a deal that they did with a foreign country. And
no, it didn't do anything to the stock. Because I actually tried shorting it off. I never went down at all, really.
Really? When was that? When did that news come out? I thought that news been out for a little bit of a while. Huh.
I don't know. And on that headline, which whenever it was, there was a headline there 3-4 days ago that could get, you know, as much as $5 billion in fines. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, but that's regurgitated. This has been going on. That's been going on for a while.
Okay. Anyway, so on that headline, I don't think they ever had the $5 billion. I never saw the $5 billion number. Anyways, they shrugged that off. It didn't do anything on that.
All right. Well, boom, boom. We are leaking. Pre-market high at 187.50. We're back at 184.30. That kind of gives me maybe your high is in for the day here, as you allow people that are caught long here above 84.5. So you have a slow leak going. Nice run up. What did we hit? The low was 150.170. You're now almost 35, 40 bucks above it here. I'd be more inclined to wait and try and buy this thing on a pullback is chasing it up 460. Any thoughts on Goldman Sachs?
No, just you've broken out over 180. Hold 180. Let's, you know, not see them leak. We have seen Goldman, and notoriously on earnings, we've seen a pop and drop. it is very, you know, the last, I feel like it's like the last four or five times, you know, at least four out of five times, last time's report, it's had a nice pop on the initial earnings report. And then by the time the end of the day comes around, it's went to the red. So just, I'm cautious chasing this one. I know it's worked with Citi. I know it worked with a few of them there. I'm cautious actually with this one. So I'm not chasing it just because, you know, I look at what they've done previously and it hasn't actually not responded well to good earnings before. And it has a lot of times in the pre-market been trading higher. So I'm not getting caught in this, not going to short it necessarily because all the banks are hot right now. But I'm not chasing it up here either, although I'm not chasing much right now. I mean, you look at where we've come from, and I've been talking with this for a while. Now we look like we're trying to get over 260, and we're trying to start another leg higher here. Again, S&P's breaking out yesterday, Joel. Yeah. Maybe it's just going to be this V-bottom, and everything's just going to go straight up, you know, from that 1,000-point up day. I thought we were having the 1,000-point up day. I did not think we'd continue to have this kind of follow-through, and we have. Everybody's totally forgotten about November and December. They totally forgot, you know, there's some stocks that are still down, but the fear is gone. As much as the fear was there on December 24th and December 26th, it is just gone now. Now it's the fear of missing out here again. So I'm not sure if the bears come out of hibernation here again, if we get a headline that can all of a sudden spook the market. But right now, the only fear out there is the fear of missing out.
Great point by Spinner here, and that was actually a segue to my next earnings coverage. Now, J.P. Morgan and C, I know J.P. Morgan got hit yesterday off the headline report, put in a nice double bottom in 98.66, 98.60, ended up green on the session, continuing green this morning. Same thing with Citigroup, red to green. Now, will that happen with Punk? PNC Financial. They delivered to the street a Q4 miss. Street was looking for 279. They came in at 275. Sales miss as well. Street was looking for 4.4 billion. They came in at 4.34 billion. So Punk trading in the red here, down $1.57. Pre-market low, I'll give you that, is 118.98. And on your dailies, I like it better down at 118. I see a parallel 1794 at 1837, but that's still a buck and a half away. Dennis, any comments here on Punk?
Nah, it's too small. Let's move on. And some people trade PNC, 25,000 shares. If you want us to give commentary here, it's down a buck and a half. It is ex-dividend as well, so they just to close the 1/2017, paid a 95-cent dividend. I think they always do that on earnings day. But there's so many other stories here. Let's move away from the banks. I'm falling asleep talking to these banks here now. Let's go JWN.
Why don't you say how you really feel, Dennis? I mean, don't hold back.
We talk banks. I'm done with banks now. Let's go JWN here. I think the easy money's been made in the banks. That's what I'll just say on the banks. So I think there's other money to be made elsewhere here. JWN, holy cow. These retail, as hot as the banks have been, that's as cold as all the department stores are.
Man.
Started with Macy's. Obviously spilled over, and we know even Target on their same store sales got hit. Now we get data from JWN on their Christmas, and it didn't go well either. JWN down significantly in the pre-market. Do you have that numbers in front of you there, Mr. Alconer?
Let me see the numbers. Let me go to my Benzinga Pro here. We have I know they guided lower for the quarter. JWN delivers a miss here, and well, boom. Why am I JWN? I'm not getting it. I do not see it.
Okay, hang on. Let me just go grab. Comp sales were up 1.3%. Holiday sales, their guidance they also gave as well. I'm just grabbing from the headlines here. The comps, holiday sales weren't good. The guidance was light. So that's all you need to know. Stock down $3.50, trading down 7.5% here in the pre-market, making new lows. And just check out what Macy's did. So Macy's on their holiday sales got crushed to the tune, we know, of like 20% that day, over 20%, from 32 all the way down to 27. Since then, all those buy the dippers are not being rewarded because it's been down four straight days there again, has not had any slate of a green candle yet. So I'm not trying to call the bottom in Macy's. I'm not trying to call the bottom in any of these department stores until we at least show some signs of life. market's been going straight up. Department stores not participating at all. Yes, Kohl's bounced a bit on theirs, but JWN here disappoints. 73.40, making new lows. Let's see what it does. I mean, if you can hold 43.70, and that's right where the offer is right now. That's the low from December 24th. If it can hold there, then you got a chance where the buy the dippers might come in. If you take that out, then it starts to get dicey. And I think you're dicey all the way down to 40 bucks.
Yeah,
so 43.70 is critical to hold.
Yeah, I was chatting with a buddy about the Macy's after that report. And, you know, the buddy was looking on the long side or talking, you know, where is it going? I'm like, the company just came out and gave you bad news, right? They told you things aren't good. So, you know, maybe it's a buy, maybe when it gets down to lower levels, but at least, you know, use the information that the company gave you, and you got a gap down day, and it actually put in a double top and has come down. I don't know if it's going to get back to that 20 buck area, but save for JWN here. I mean, offered heavily here, trading down 357. And I look at the low of the move too, and that was 43.70, trading there right now. You did have a month of monthly lows of 45. That's history. If you really want this cheap, $37.79 was your back in November, your low back in November of 2017. Don't think we'll see that yet today.
One thing on Nordstrom is there's always the wild card. We've had, you know, multiple times. Who was it that was trying to put the offer in always of 50 or 55 bucks? Was
the
it
company.
The former?
The company.
Yeah, so there has been, you know, rumors of this going private, and it seems like every time it gets to the low 40s, it flies another rumor of it going private and it pops. We've saw it for the last couple of years, I feel like, on Nordstrom. So I'd be cautious shorting down here, just in case you get a crazy headline or something like that. And you know what? Like Spinner brings up, a lot of the retail has done okay. We've seen, you know, Lululemon, which is obviously one of the most loved out there, perform well. Nike has performed very well. Foot Locker has done very well. It's really the big department stores that have really underperformed. Maybe, you know, we've talked about this for a while, the expenses of them may be hurting them as well. But, you know, you look at Macy's and obviously it's in the gutter. Some of the smaller ones like Tailored Brands haven't done well, but it's kind of mixed to a certain extent. So I don't want to imply that all retail is weak, but the big department stores have not performed well here. And, you know, Kohl's, Macy's, and Nordstrom's all tend to trade together to a certain extent. So I'm still watching Macy's. When Macy's can start to turn it around, give me a green candle, then I might get interested in some of these other ones.
And the street is ganging up here after the fact. Jack Telsey Advisory Group downgrades JWN. Goldman Sachs downgrades from buy to neutral. The TAG was from outperform to market perform. Atlantic Equities piles in here.
Analyst Chase Price.
Yep, from overweight to neutral. I don't know where the other guys are hanging on this one, but it's weird because there were great Christmas sales, right? Wasn't this like everyone spent money like crazy this holiday? And I guess it wasn't at the big department stores here. 829. I didn't get to do much on the S&Ps here. We cleared that resistance at 2600 yesterday. And now we knocked on the door. We took out yesterday's high. I'll keep an eye on that still. 2613.75. That's been the high of the rebound. And 50% of the move way up at 2634.50. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Coming back on the downside, your close now will be good support. The high close of the rebound at 2505.50.
Another major headline here. Let's go to Snap, Joel, SNAP. They had some guidance come out last night, but the bigger news was might be that the CFO is leaving. And we know it seems like in this market, when the companies are losing the CFOs, they hit the stock. And initially, this actually popped, and I was looking at it. I actually tried to get short. I was sitting there at 675. It went 680, and then it went down to like 650, came all the way back up and traded in front of me, and I should have moved down and obviously got, you know, and traded down and maybe short at 650 because I never got done at 675. And then I watched the thing fall 10%, and I was like, ugh. So I had the right call, but I missed the execution, and that's never fun.
Yeah, Steve Tibstone announces his intention to resign here. They had some bad numbers after the close. Just I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you can say about it. You had a little bit of a rally going here in sympathy with the market. Now you have a pre-market low at 575. You're trading just a dime above that. So looking on the dailies, I see a pair of lows at 563, right on the kisser. You haven't hit that yet. I guess the big number you want to look at was that low back on December 21st, and that hit $4.82. So Snap and just, I don't like
the story with Snap. Like I said, a few days ago, somebody was asking me and it has come back. And I said, I just don't like the story here. And that's why I'm not a buyer of the rally, or, you know, I'm just not interested in my long-term portfolio here because I don't think people are using it as much. And I think that's got major issues. And I said, I think, you know, when we look at this, when it was a 650 a few days ago, I said, I think it's lower when I look at it at the end of the year. It's lower when I look at it at the end of the week, 583. So I think this thing's, I think when we look at this end of the year, it's under $5.
All right.
It's going to be maybe a choppy road to get there, but I think the trend is not your friend here. And I don't like the story. Not a fan of the Snap.
So is there $2 million to buy in Bank America this morning here, trading up a
button? $217,000. So you missed by a digit on your guess.
Okay. But,
yeah, so $217,000. It's going to grow. It's going to be over $1 million by the open. The stock's trading up 4.5% here in the pre-market. It's a beautiful lift here for BAC. Looking at other imbalances this morning, you know what? They're so small. And it's, again, institutions are just tight with their orders here. They don't want to show them that early. They don't mind showing a little bit on the Bank of America. You can see Nordstrom's got 19,000 to sell. But for the most part, they just, you know, don't want to show their orders that early because they don't want people stepping ahead of it and then getting in front of them and knocking the price down. So it's smart. It's smart by the institutions. They don't show their hand as much as they used to. But, you know, the odd time they do. And that's why you got to look at this information, because when they do show your hand, you may as well take a look. So there we are. As
what about the stock in the book here? I mean, it's a new high of the move. It's up.
BAC?
I mean, you know, there's, I mean, we've traded $2.5 million, but I mean, this, I mean, the only, I mean, there's got to be just, let's see, let's look at the daily here at Bank of America. You did clear out those sellers at 26 a few days ago. The charts look pretty wide open. Nothing up on that.
You're right, Joel. This book is littered with size. Now, it's going to take it out, because you got so much volume, already $2.5 million. By the time this thing opens, it's going to trade $7 or $8 million. So it can take out all this size, but it's a good point to make here. Like at 27, there's 90,000 shares. Obviously, the stock's 27.77. Those are going to get taken out unless there's a complete turnaround here. Then at 27.30, there's 66,000. 27.50, there's 100,000. This is orders that are on the New York book to be executed on the open. So we're just kind of getting a feel for how much, you know, selling pressure. Or how much, you know, there's obviously the buying pressure, but how much is going to be, you know, on the other side of it. You go all the way up to 28, and there's 250,000 to 28. That would be my bogey. I think you're right. I think you get up near 28. If it opens and then just keeps blasting through, like, and it's going to have crazy volume, so it can blow it up through 280,000 probably in one mighty blow. But it's a good point. You know, that's what these things often get to, is the big hole numbers, and they stall out there because their size there. And just because you see 250,000 in the book right now, it doesn't mean there's not more there too. So we'll keep an eye, but I would say my first bogey would be 28. So great point, Joel.
And just to add on to that, I mean, I don't have my options platform open, but what if you took, I'm sure they made you pay up for the 27 calls or the 2750 calls quite a bit, but if you got the 20, I mean, you got to be sitting on a profit here on the 27 calls here, no matter what. So if they open up, let's say they open up, that's equivalent to a price of $28. Yeah, I mean, I just think that another thing could cap it.
Let's look at yesterday's close. So yesterday's closing option prices for the January expiration, which is obviously this week. So we can do, you don't have to look at weeklies because we've got the monthly expiration this week. 27 calls. We're going for a quarter only. So fairly cheap. They were 25 cents. That actually seems really cheap, doesn't it? So you're significantly in the money there. They're 50 cents better, because 27 and a quarter would be your break even if you bought those quarters. 27 and a half were 12. Open interest wasn't that huge on these. 105,000 contracts. So there was a few.
Okay.
That's the biggest open interest around. 105,000 contracs. So, you know, it's significant. You know, 10 million worth of 27, but that's always something to look at, though. But I'm actually surprised that they're only 25 cents. But I guess, you know, that it had to go up 45 cents just to get to the 27 strike plus the 27 and a quarter. So it needed to go up 65, 75 cents to break even. So I guess that works out.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, Dennis, here. We'll let you get straight in some of those positions. We'll bring in Frank Holmes. He's the CEO and Chief Investment Officer of U.S. Global Investors, the creator of the JETS ETF. He sent some charts along with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Frank. Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm your co-host, Joel Alcana, along with Dennis Dick. We have Chris DeScarlise working the boards, and we are joined by Frank Holmes, the CEO and Chief Investment Officer of U.S. Global Investors and the creator of the JETS ETF. Frank, how you doing on this Wednesday morning?
Outstanding, my friend. Markets are up. Things are looking good.
Okay. All right. We're going to go to the airlines. We've talked a lot of airlines so far, but let's talk a little bit about the gold market here. And it's kind of had a kind of a sneaky rally here. Goldman Sachs is bullish on gold for 2019, forecasting 14 and a quarter. We've seen some Barron's articles and stuff here, but we're going to bring a chart up here in gold achieves a golden cross. Explain that golden cross to us here and what you're looking for in the gold market.
Well, for those who are trend followers and momentum, they look at the 50-day moving average and the 200-day moving average. That's like looking at 10 weeks and 10 months. So that when the short term, the price trend, price action over the past 50 trading days goes above the long-term 200-day moving average, that's called the golden cross, and that means usually something is very positive. And it's not great getting a whole lot of great news gold. So to me, it makes it very bullish that it trades higher. It's interesting that Goldman Sachs has turned bullish from that. But I think what's important for your listeners is the 10% golden rule. And I've always advocated a 10% exposure to bullion and to gold stocks and rebalance each year. What's a real shocker, Joel, is that in this century, since the year 2000, bullion has outperformed the S&P by 200%.
All right. So I'm just going off the dailies here with it. And so often you see a move, you see a big move. You hit a psychological level here. 1340 was the exact low of the move. And then you get this consolidation here where buyers and squalors square off here. Is this just another consolidation here to move into the 1400 handle? And what do you think? You think it's something that's going to come out of the Fed? Is nervousness? Because the market has recovered. And a lot of times when the market recovers, they like to, you know, they like to pull their money out of the gold market.
Well, I think that the gold market is something else is happening, and that is there's a peak supply of gold. In fact, the grades for these mines is declining. There's no new mega discoveries. We've announced in the past 4 months two mega takeovers. Newmont yesterday takes over Goldcorp, and then last quarter we had Barrick merged with Randgold. So we have these mega mergers because they can't find the gold. It's very expensive. There's been no major discovery. So we have peak supply, but demand continues to grow, and rising GDP per capita for China and India is the most significant driver for the love trade, which is 60% of all consumption of gold. So I think there's a real interesting supply demand factors behind it. And that's why we created the Go Gold, Go AU ETF, which is based on a quant factors for picking these gold stocks.
It's tough. I mean, don't tell, Newmont Mining, maybe that had earnings a couple days ago, it goes from 35 to 31, but I guess I'd have to agree. I mean, if you want to play the gold market, play the bullion, play the gold, buy gold coins, because, I know ABX had that merger. I mean, these stocks have they got their dividend, so that gives you a little bit of protection here. But do you have, do you have any favorites or any outperformers here? I'm looking at Randgold, and that's gone for 14 to 12.
I really love the GoAU. We spent 8,000 hours back testing all the factors that drive, okay, and it rebalances each quarter. It spends on smart factors of my 35 years of experience in the industry, and then aggressively data mining, and outperforms the GDXJ 90% of the time in rolling 12 months for the past decade. So I think that that's a smart way to go. If you're speculative, there's a company called Menee, M-E-N-E, and you can buy 24-karat gold jewelry through them like Amazon. And they're going to be very disruptive to the worlds of Tiffany. And I think it's and gold's only marked up by 10%, and I'll always buy back your gold from you. And Picasso's granddaughter is the designer of this simple jewelry. So it's a public company listed in Toronto, M-E-N-E, or you just go to their website and you buy some of that beautiful 24-karat gold jewelry.
All right, so let's move over to the airline stocks and UAL leading the charge here. It is leaking. It's only up 494. It was up more. Recent Barron's article, how insiders at airlines were buying. Let's talk about the Jets ETF here. We could talk about individual stocks, but first let's go to that Jets ETF here. And boy, it's finding a lot of resistance here, just under $29. Let's talk Jets ETF and UAL earnings.
So here are the two headwinds right now. The very most short headwind is this government shutdown and the TSA lines for going through security are, I'm told, in Miami, 4 to 5 hour waits.
No.
So that's creating a headwind for travel. But I think it's temporary and sets up a great buy, because when that gets resolved, people have to fly. 2 million a day fly for business predominantly in America every day. And I think that's what makes the industry so unique. But the traders use oil prices. So whenever oil is above the 50-day moving average, they sell down Jets. Anytime it falls below the 50-day oil price, they buy Jets, the airline industry. But I think what's really important for listeners is that energy used to be the number one component expense, but they make so much money on all these crazy fees they charge you. $300 to change your ticket, $100 for a bag. Globally, all these charges are adding up to $85 billion of an auxiliary revenue. So this is an industry that has a moat around it. It's very difficult to build new airports, and you have pricing power, and you have all these auxiliary fees. So I think when you look at the transport index, they trade at half of the value of trains and trucks. So I much prefer the airlines industry.
Yeah, so were you a bit perplexed here when you had, the oil plunging from $75, into the mid-$40 handle? I mean, did that catch you off guard a little bit as far as, I know it's not the biggest expense of it, but usually you get a better thought. I mean, if you get crude back up at 60, you're saying it's not as big a deal because they have these other areas of where they have better margins?
Correct. And they've become much more sophisticated in their hedging of oil.
That's what I want to ask you. Who are the big hedgers?
In addition to the oil.
Who are the big hedgers out there?
Who would like? Southwest Airlines hedges, JetBlue hedges 50%. The only one that's really not hedged is American Airlines. And what's interesting is their CEO is taking his compensation in stock. So they're buying back their stock and they're increasing their dividend. So his income salary is basically coming from the dividends he's getting from the stock.
All right. I'd mention that. Over the last week and a half, I was 6 for 6 at American Airlines. And on time, you can't beat that. So that's my favorite here in the sector as well. Passenger traffic is expected to grow 6% in 2019. Capacity increase of 5.8%. I mean, that remains above the 20-year growth rate. I mean, this should, how long is it going to take to bear out here for the airlines to stage a recovery based off this information?
I think when Warren Buffett buys one of these airlines, he's talked about it. Everyone was so negative when I first launched Jets because Buffett didn't like his experience with U.S. Air. That's all changed. And now he's invested $10 billion into the sector. And he said, wouldn't put him beyond him to go and buy one of these airlines. Because it's the perfect Buffett investment, because it has a moat around it. It has disciplined CEOs that are buying back the stock, that they have higher returns on invested capital. All the factors, the fundamentals of how to run the business, has changed dramatically from his bad experience in the airline industry.
And that's you're thinking. I mean, what one is he currently in? Is it I don't want to be misquoted.
Look at Jets. It has four big horses.
Okay.
That dominate. They dominate American travel. It's Southwest Airlines, United, Delta, and American. And he has investments in all of them.
Which one do you think that if he did, you know, if he took the big step, you know, which one do you think would be most appealing just to buy the whole company?
Probably the culture would be Southwest Airlines.
Okay. All right. We'll keep an eye.
It's the all-American culture.
You like that? Okay. Yeah, I can remember flying that when I was in Chicago, and they had you weren't assigned seats, and that kind of got a good deal on my American Airlines ticket, where I didn't I could get a seat at the end. But when I went to check in, I could all of a sudden they gave me an opportunity for $10 to pick up to pick up an aisle. So Southwest was kind of ahead of the curve. And then remember when they used to have those seats used to face the people, like in the back of the plane? That was that was a long time ago, but they've modernized planes. Just, you know, speaking just in general here, you know, you see this potential here in the airlines industry, and I just wondered, do you follow Boeing Airlines at all here? That stock has had a nice move up after being under $300. I mean, they do have some competition here, but do you think the strength in the airline sector will parlay into continued gains for Boeing Airlines?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things in 2017, Boeing was the best Dow stock. In 2018, I think what slowed it down on a relative basis was a strong dollar. So whenever the dollar is very strong, then Airbus becomes more competitive. And whenever the dollar is soft and weak, Boeing just rocks because it's a better airplane. So you see this rotation that go back and forth. But I remain very bullish on the sort of the global growth. And we're going to see more, buying out of Asia, buying Boeing. I remain very bullish on Boeing.
And you mentioned the government slowdown at the top of the show here. And as I told you, as I mentioned, that did not have a good thing. I wasn't flying through Miami. I would have missed my flight here. But do you think that there's a point where the government, shutdown lingers on, that it's going to have a negative effect on these airlines?
I think so. But I think if anything, Trump, the way he's a businessman, that he realizes that 2 million people a day have to fly to keep the economy going, he'll find a way around to make sure that the airports are functioning, because he's got that businessman model of thinking in this whole debate for a wall.
Okay. All right. And just before we let you go here, any general comments on the overall market, not quite the December that everyone wanted here. Markets are turning up here in January. Is there any, the Fed or any other macro factors here that you'll be keeping an eye on to determine the long-term direction of the market here in 2019?
In all our perspectives, as we say, government policy is a precursor to change. And we monitor both monetary and fiscal policies. It's interesting because it's a very simple macro model. And it is interest rates that's our key component that would help the market. And last year, we had rising interest rates, which is a headwind. And then we had trade wars, which is a fiscal drag. And that slowed down overall global growth. I think any settlement on the trade war with China will be extremely bullish for the market, and any peak in interest rates will be very bullish for the market. So if you get both of those engines from fiscal policy improving from trade wars gone and interest rates have peaked and it starts to decline or just go sideways, market skies.
All right. I want to just mention that you are the co-author of The Gold Watcher, Demystifying Gold Investing. Any other books that you publish or anything you're working on?
Well, I have a blog, and I have about 50,000 readers in 180 countries. And you go to usfunds.com, and you can subscribe to Investor Alert, published every week. And it's always the strengths and weaknesses of the past week and opportunities and threats for next week. And it's always capped at 12 sentences. So that it's succinct, comprehensive.
All right. And you know what? Just I got you here, and I think about, you know, transportation. I think about the airline sector, and I think about the automotive sector. And I know you don't cover it here, Tesla, is Tesla going to come up with an airplane? I mean, they're talking about going to the moon here. Do you see any disruption, you know, coming in the automotive industry and, you know, perhaps Tesla getting into the airlines industry?
No, there's nothing that really I see, but Tesla, okay. They just got to correct their own car problems.
Okay. Frank.
And they have a macro, you know, cars on a macro basis are slowing down. So they've really have, that's a headwind for them. So I think they have to be very careful what they focus on.
Frank Holmes, CEO and Chief Investment Officer of U.S. Global Investors, creator of the Jets ETF, joining us here on Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Frank, always a pleasure speaking to you, and we'll be checking in with you soon.
Thank you, my friend. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. S&P futures up 8 points at 26.13 and a quarter. Your pre-market high stands at 26.17. Not much there on the dailies or the weeklies, or monthlies, or anything here. My target on the upside here, if the market really keep this momentum going, is the old 50% retracement. The SPOOs did get up over 29.50, I believe, 29.51. We had a climb to 23.1675 and 26.34 is smack dab in the middle. 7 minutes left here. Let's bring back Triple D and get his observations here, the recent pre-market action.
You know what? It's very quiet, actually, considering you've got some big movers in individual stocks. We already talked Nordstrom trading down 7.5% here this morning, and obviously it's some of your banks trading very strong here this morning. Overall, market is very quiet. So one thing we didn't talk about here yet today is FANG, and FANG had a fantastic day yesterday. Facebook up significantly. Amazon was up $60. Netflix was up significantly. We know on the price raises there are the subscription price raises of $2. And then also Google was up, I think, 40 or 50 points as well, or maybe not quite that far, but 35 points. So nice move there, 30 points. Nice move for Google as well. FANG was hot yesterday, and FANG was the driver of yesterday's market rally. There was a lot of stocks that actually, believe it or not, were trading in the red yesterday, but FANG was the driver. I don't know if that's going to be the continuation here or not. I'm long two of them in my invest portfolio. I've got Facebook, which I've already talked about, which I actually think I'm green in now. I was down. I fought a little bit early. Amazon, I do not have. Netflix, I do not have. But those are both valuation issues. You know I'm a value guy. And Google, I do own. And I believe Google's still cheap as well. What are your thoughts here? You know, FANG, look at it overall.
I know.
And these stocks have been quiet for a while. I mean, well, Facebook, you know, is just starting to perk up a little bit. Amazon has, you know, they've had a quiet week and a half after the big moves. Are they ready to take us to the next level?
I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at the Facebook here, and I did notice that's one of the top performers in the S&P, and ended the year at 131.09 on December 31st, and then, you know, now you're pressing on the 150 level, so a nice percentage gain there. So definitely, I mean, the trend is your friend. Will it go all the way back to 220 or 230? No, but you know, it got beat up. It kind of swallowed the pill on you know, a lot of different things and a lot of different issues. I mean, you still have the threat of government regulation, you know, increased regulation hanging over these stocks. But you know what? I mean, you can only buy so much value stocks, and you know, dispersing it in FANG and the other issues. I will just take a look here.
Well, some of these FANG stocks are value stocks. I mean, you start looking like Facebook. What is that trading? You know, and I'm not, you know, coming here and giving the bull case here for Facebook. I'm just saying that in FANG itself, they're not all trading with 50, 60 multiples anymore. I mean, Facebook's multiple going forward, trailing was 22. So going forward, it's probably like 19 or 20. Google multiple, trailing was 40, but I think, you know, just from last quarter, I think the multiple on Google's a lot less than that. Last time I looked, I believe it was in the low 20s. I don't have it in front of me here, but if somebody can help me out with that, that's good. But I mean, Google and Facebook multiples are both lower. Amazon's multiple is not as crazy as it once was, because obviously the price come down significantly there. Netflix multiple has always been crazy, but we know that's just driven by subscribers. Still trading, I think, over 100 times. But, you know, this cost, you know, or raise of $2 is going to help their bottom line as well.
Yep, and Spinner's mentioning here a little pre-earnings run, right? Shorts getting a little bit nervous.
Yeah, tomorrow night.
Yeah,
that's gonna be the tell. What's gonna happen tomorrow night?
And
it's not a little pre-earnings run. It's a full-on like one of the biggest earnings runs I've ever seen in my life. Can that continue? I mean, there's some shorts getting squeezed. Could they squeeze them further? Yeah. So it's not just a slam dunk short ahead of the earnings because a lot of good news is priced in. Yes, there's a lot of good news priced in. But when you look at a chart like this, this tells me anybody who is waiting for a pullback to cover their short or maybe a pullback to buy has not got it. So if you get a pullback in Netflix here now, there will be people scrambling for cover. So sometimes, you know, you see these, you know, rallied into earnings and you think, okay, well, it's got to blow it away for it to go higher. In this case, yeah, but also there's a lot of people caught in this thing. I mean, this is rallied. This is one of the most incredible rallies it's ever had. This is up over 50% in 2.5 weeks.
Yeah,
it's up over 50%. This is Netflix. This isn't like some small penny stocks. Netflix rallied over 50% last 2.5 weeks. I thought it'd stall out at 340. It did not. It's continued. Obviously, you know, we had a catalyst. I think it was 333 the day I was saying, I think it's going to stall out here, you know, somewhere in the next few points. And I thought 340 might top it. But then, you know, they did the $2 raise and they blew through that too. Now you start thinking about all-time highs. I cannot believe, you know, just think about where we came from. Think about, you know, how bad sentiment was on December the 24th when they were selling everything. Think about that. How it just turned. And this is like the poster child for how much it turned, and it turned so quickly. And it didn't really, you know, you had to chase. You were never got a retest of those lows. You know, once we bounced 1,000 points, yes, we had the one first day of January, we were down a little bit there. And that was the buying opportunity. I bought two stocks that day. FedEx was one that I bought, and I never took any heat, and obviously I'm still in FedEx here in the long-term portfolio. I believe the other one I bought was Western Digital, and that's kind of been all over the place for me. I'm still up in it, but it was doing well until I got that wicked downgrade from Evercore there a few days ago and knocked it down. But obviously wish I would have bought more stocks.
And I just want to take a quick look. I mean, we cover a lot of news. We talk about, you know, things and the price action and stocks, but how about all the people that puked out their Apple on January 3rd? They came out with that news, the stock lost $15 and went down.
But that hasn't even come back much.
Yeah.
Like, you think about what everything else has come back. Apple's been a big time laggard. I mean, you're up 10 bucks, but look at where, from November, you know, let's just put this in perspective, Joel. 220 down to 143. We're only at 153. Apple's only got like 10 or 15% of the losses from the last, you know, maybe, you know, 20% of the losses back from November. A lot of these other stocks have over half. In the case of Netflix, it's almost got all, in the case of Netflix, it's actually up. It's up since the beginning of November. So it's not only got back the losses from November, December, it's actually now getting the losses back from October. So, I mean, Amazon has come back significantly from its losses in November, December. It's almost got it all back. So Apple has completely lagged here, completely lagged. And maybe it's because of the bigger, thicker stock, and maybe, you know, they're worried. But, I mean, Apple has been a very big underperformer. I own this in my investment account, so I'm talking against my buck here. But, man, the trading action in Apple has been very disappointing when you look at what everything else has rallied in that same time.
Any ratings here? We discussed everyone ganging up here on JW Nordstrom. I believe that's starting to recover a little bit. And I'm looking at some of these other ratings here. And
what are you looking at?
I see the JWN. I see a lot of that. I mean, I see a lot of smaller companies here.
Sensor upgrade at Citigroup. That's up 1.5 this morning. MetLife catches an upgrade at Bank of America. Morgan Stanley downgrading NetApp to underperform. That obviously, you know, to underperform is equivalent of sell, and that's going to give it a lot of pressure here this morning. It's offered right now at $60.75, so 60.74 on an odd lot. I would think it's going to test 60 here today. So when they, you know, get into underperform that, obviously, you know, everybody takes note of those ones. So there's a few ratings, but the analysts are actually, this was a quiet day. They've been pretty busy lately. So, you know, it's not surprising that eventually they're going to have a couple quiet days in here because the analysts have been going pretty crazy. But yeah, they ganged up Nordstrom. There is a few other ones. There's some smaller companies, like you said, Joel, but nothing really jumping out and saying, whoa, and check out this rating.
All right, let's wrap things up. S&P's up 7.25 here at 26.1275. Got a quick spike to 26.17. So that's your first target on the upside. You want to see that get up to that 50% retracement, 26.3450. Coming back on the downside here, mid-range is at 26.0975. That's only $3 away. So if you really feel like you got to be long here, you should get a shot at that 26.10 area. I'd like to see this the index improve on the high close of the rebound here. That comes in at 26.0550, your pre-market low. 11 handles away at 26.0250. So glad to be back with you here, Dennis, and working out the kinks, getting back in. I'm not sure when Spencer's going to be back, but I want to thank Chris DiScalise here for working the boards. He was a little nervous, Dennis. He almost had to take your place as you were having a little problems with Skype. But you did a great job working the boards. We're looking forward to tomorrow's show. So, everyone, have a great trading day. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning.